The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on May 12, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, good morning. Thank you for coming today. It's Mother's Day today, so... That's a good day. I once again wanted to talk about Zen practice, and Zen practice is to live as we truly are, and already we're living as we truly are. But usually what we truly are, our true self, is ignored or overlooked. When we first start out in Zen practice, we usually think of Zen practice as a means or a technique for gain and improvement. And usually when we start out, we're very much caught up in our ideas, beliefs, and expectations. And we're caught up in the sense that we believe reality corresponds to the ideas, beliefs, and expectations that we have about it. And we live our lives based on this belief rather than living our life based on here now awareness. We live our life based on our ideas, beliefs, and expectations, thereby ignore our actual true life. So this is how our true life is ignored. So our practice is to see and let go of how our true life is ignored and to live as we truly are. And to carry out this practice is to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And when I first hear about this practice of awareness, we think it's a technique to gain something for ourselves. We have expectations and want to make progress, but the practice is just to be aware here and now, just for the sake of being aware here and now, not to try and make progress, not to try and attain things that we think we're lacking, just to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. In this practice of here now awareness, when it becomes evident that we're caught up in our expectations and caught up in one-sided ideas and beliefs, just let go of them by resuming the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. It's not about trying to get something. It's not thinking I'm lacking something and I need this practice as a technique to get it. Just be aware here and now. In this practice of awareness, the expectations, ideas, and beliefs can drop away by themselves. It becomes clear that our true life, the directly experienced reality here and now, could not correspond to the expectations, ideas, and beliefs that we have about it. That becomes clear. That becomes directly evident. It's not something that can be explained, but it can be directly realized. Our true life, our true self, our true nature is what is being directly experienced here and now. No matter what we say about it, it cannot be explained, described, or conceptually pinned down. It cannot be seen objectively. It's not something apart from us that we could see as an object separate from us. Nevertheless, our true life, this directly experienced here now reality, is clear and obvious in the sense that it's being directly experienced here and now, and everything is a manifestation of it. It's not something that could be hidden. There's not something apart from it that could hide it. Everything that shows up is a manifestation of it. That's why I say it's clear and obvious. It's directly experienced here and now. Everything is a manifestation of it. It's just we usually overlook that by getting caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs and living based on them rather than living based on direct here and now awareness. We're usually very confused about what our true life is, and this is because we believe so deeply that reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. We live our lives based on ideas and beliefs and ignore directly experienced here and now reality. When it becomes evident that this is going on, resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. As I mentioned before, in this practice of here and now awareness, expectations, ideas, and beliefs can drop away by themselves. It becomes directly evident that reality couldn't correspond to the expectations, ideas, and beliefs that we have about it. That becomes clear in this practice. It doesn't become clear by trying to figure it out. It doesn't become clear by trying to juggle our ideas and come up with the right idea about what our true life is or what this practice is. This is not about trying to get the right idea. Mostly when people start out, they think, well, I want to get the right idea about what this is. Yeah. They might think they already have the right idea and they feel pretty proud of themselves. Yeah, I got the right idea about what this is. Now, but that's just getting caught up in confusion. Although whatever we say about our life, our true life, doesn't completely say it, still, we have to say something, as my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, used to say. Teachers need to give pointers using words and concepts to help their students in their investigation of direct here and now experience. These pointers are meant as suggestions to help students in their investigation of directly experienced here and now reality. The teacher doesn't want the students to grasp, cling to, and believe what is said. He doesn't want the students to grasp the idea he uses to point to what the true life is. Instead, the teacher is trying to offer helpful suggestions to help the students directly realize and live their true life. In doing this, the teacher might speak in terms of conventional common sense ideas and appearances in which reality seems to be dualistically structured. Of course, there seems to be all these separate individuals, things, and phenomena. You might speak about reality in that way. He also might speak in terms of oneness or universality or wholeness or totality or emptiness or eternity or Buddha nature. He might use ideas like this to point. He's because eventually it can be realized that this is a reality where you can't actually find these separate things. But he's not trying to, he doesn't want his students to grasp, cling to, or believe the one-sided ideas and beliefs that he uses. He's just pointing. He's just pointing, trying to give suggestions to his students to help them realize their true life beyond any ideas of what their true life is. Steve had a very good example. He used to use in his teaching years ago. He used to say that Zen teaching is like the teacher writes on a blackboard. He'll say something to point to reality. And he may leave that on the blackboard for a little while, or he may erase it right away. But he doesn't want the students to cling to that idea that he's using. So he erases what he wrote and writes something else. Maybe he points out reality in a slightly different way to give another point or another suggestion about what our director now experiences. But the teacher doesn't want the students to cling to that, so the teacher will erase that. And then the teacher will say something else. And then he may let that stay on the blackboard for a while, or he may erase it right away, but he won't keep it up there forever. He'll eventually erase it. He doesn't want his students to cling to whatever he says. He's just pointing, just trying to give suggestions. The teacher can't give you realization. The teacher is just pointing so that you can verify this reality and realize it for yourself. You have to realize it yourself. The teacher can't give you an idea to get the right idea about what it is. So the teacher's trying to give suggestions to his students, pointers, suggestions to help them realize their true life beyond any ideas of what their true life is. I've been saying that the practice of living as we truly are is to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And at first people will hear this and think, oh, I should be aware here and now. I should do something in particular called being aware. I'm a particular, separate individual, and I should do something in particular called being aware. But that's not quite it. Eventually, we're carrying out this practice of here now awareness. It can be directly realized that directly experienced awareness here and now is what we truly are. And once again, this statement is not an idea to be grasped and believed. This statement is a pointer to help us in our investigation of directly experienced here and now reality, and to help us directly realize what we truly are, and to help us directly realize what this practice is, what this practice of living as we truly are is. So our true life is this directly experienced here now reality. And each being is a manifestation of this awareness or awakeness, which is being directly experienced here and now. A technical term for this awareness or awakeness is Buddha nature. This is an all-inclusive reality. There's nothing outside of it. It's a beginningless, endless, all-inclusive, subjectless, objectless awareness or awakeness itself. Nothing outside of this reality. And each being is manifesting this awareness or awakeness in its own unique way. And my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, used to say, as I mentioned many times, You are Buddha. All beings are Buddha. And all beings are Buddha in the sense that all beings are manifestations of Buddha nature. And each being is manifesting this Buddha nature in its own way. So ultimately, practice is not a means to become an awakened person or a Buddha. Practice is to be the Buddha or the awareness or the awakeness that you are right now. This is also to respect each being as Buddha. Each being is manifesting this Buddha nature, which is our true life. Our true life, our true self, our true nature is the Buddha nature. Practice is to see and let go of how Buddha nature is ignored and to fully live as the Buddhas that we truly are. My teacher, Katagiri Roshi, strongly emphasized this point. But he wasn't trying to give us an idea to grasp and believe. He was trying to give us a suggestion, a pointer to help us directly realize our true life as it is, beyond any idea of what our true life is. This practice is not a technique to get something. This practice is to live our true life, this all-inclusive true life. It's not about thinking, well, I'm lacking enlightenment, peace, freedom, and wisdom. I'm lacking those states. I need to use my practice as a technique to get those states that I'm lacking. But enlightenment, peace, freedom, and wisdom are right here. There's nothing outside this directly experienced here now reality. Enlightenment, peace, freedom, and wisdom are right here. Our practice isn't to attain enlightenment as something separate from us, but to live the enlightenment, peace, freedom, wisdom, Buddha nature that is our life right now. One time, Katagiri Roshi was asked by a student, if I practice Zazen, will enlightenment come to me? And Katagiri Roshi said, no, even if you practice Zazen, enlightenment will not come to you. And it won't come to you because it's not separate from you in the first place. It's right here now. Practice is to live this here now reality. It's not trying to use practice as a technique to get something that's apart from you. Someone might think that, well, and I use practice as a means to get to it. But once again, we're assuming separation from enlightenment, peace, freedom, wisdom, Buddha nature. We're assuming separation. Or ultimately, we can't find separation. Or you're thinking of practice as a technique where we could maybe lasso these wonderful states of mind, pull them towards us. You know, and we might think of practice as waiting around for enlightenment to strike us, you know. Well, if I wait long enough, it's sure to come my way, I think. There's a story I've told many times, probably too many times. But this is a story that I heard, or I read about in a comic book. Not in a sutra, I read about it in a comic book by an underground cartoonist named R. Crumb. Maybe some of you have heard of him. And the title of this cartoon that he wrote is called Meatball, and this is the story of Meatball. Sometimes meatballs would fall out of the sky and hit people on the head. And the very interesting thing would happen to people who were hit on the head by a meatball. Their personality would completely transform. They went from being complete jerks to being very kind, compassionate, conscientious people. People who were very concerned about the welfare of all beings and who were dedicated to the salvation of all sentient beings. They became wonderful, kind-hearted people. Whereas before they'd been very unpleasant, unlikable jerks. And people noticed this. They said, what a miraculous transformation this is. These people went from being complete jerks to becoming these wise, compassionate, kind-hearted people. And people began to think, I would like to get hit on the head by a meatball. And so large numbers of people started sitting outside waiting to get hit on the head by a meatball. And in the last picture of the cartoon, it shows all sorts of people, a whole bunch of people sitting out in a field waiting to get hit on the head by a meatball. But underneath this glass picture, R. Crumb writes, sorry, folks, meatball doesn't work that way. There's a story that Katagiri Roshi used to tell, or he used to talk about these pachinko parlors that they had in Japan. And pachinko is a game like pinball. And this is back before the internet came along. They have all sorts of games on the internet now. But back in this years ago, there used to be all these big buildings filled with pachinko games, which is a game very similar to pinball. And they're very popular. People love to play these pachinko pinball games. And if you got the right ball in the right hole, then the bells would ring and the lights would flash and the machine would vibrate. And it was really a very spectacular event when you got the right balls in the right holes. But Katagiri Roshi used to say, Zazen is not like playing pachinko. It's not about doing it a particular way and then getting some miraculous, spectacular result. It's not like playing pachinko. We're not waiting around for some spectacular result to show up. People wonder, how long do I have to practice before I get something wonderful from practice, before I get to enlightenment, peace, and freedom? How long do I have to practice? And I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to be practicing if it's unrealistic for me to get something wonderful out of it. You might think, well, you know, I could go to grad school and maybe that would take me 5 years. But at the end of it, I'd be able to have a PhD. Or I could practice Zen and maybe after 5 years, then maybe I'd get enlightenment and that'd be pretty good. But I don't know. I don't know. I have no assurance that I'll get enlightenment. So maybe I should just go to grad school and get that PhD, because then at least I could get a job and my practice would enable me to get a good job. And then there was another Zen teacher When he'd be asked, how long do we have to practice? He'd say, until you die. And people didn't usually like that answer. They would have liked it if he'd said, well, maybe 5 years, that ought to do it. No, but until you die. Gosh, that's not a very, very encouraging answer. And Acharya Guru Roshi was one time asked, how long do we have to practice? And Acharya Guru Roshi answered the student, he said, life after life, forever. And then the student asks, what do you mean by forever? And Acharya Guru Roshi said, at least 3,000 kalpas. And I should explain the kalpa is. Kalpa is an unfathomably long length of time. And I'll give you a couple of examples of how long the kalpa is. Imagine a block of granite, 40 miles on a side. And once every 1,000 years, a celestial maiden comes down from heaven wearing a diaphanous silk gown and gently lets her diaphanous silk gown lightly drape over this huge granite block. And the time it takes for the granite block to be worn down to a fine powder, that's one kalpa. Very, very long length of time. And there's another one. This one involves a celestial gentleman who's wearing celestial overalls because he's working in a field. So he wears overalls. Once every 1,000 years, this field is filled with poppy seeds. And this field is 40 miles on the side. Once every 1,000 years, he comes down to this field and takes one poppy seed out of the field. And a poppy seed is about as big as the head of a pin. So you can see this is going to be a very long length of time. It takes one poppy seed out, and 1,000 years later he comes down wearing his overalls, plucks another seed. When all the poppy seeds are gone, then this is one kalpa. And Katagiri Roshi says, at least we may have to practice for at least 3,000 kalpas. And a person might say, well, goodness, one kalpa is long enough. But 3,000 kalpas? I'm really getting discouraged here. This is such a long time. I don't know if I can tough it out that having to put up with all these going to Zazen every day, toughing out these god awful sessions. I don't know if I can put up with it. But Katagiri Roshi said, at least 3,000 kalpas. And then Katagiri Roshi asked the person the question. He said, can you practice for 3,000 kalpas? Then Katagiri Roshi said, well, if you can't, then you better quit right now. It's very interesting. Very interesting. Katagiri Roshi is pointing to the fact that 3,000 kalpas is right here now. Doesn't matter how many kalpas it is. Here now reality is all-inclusive time, all-inclusive space, inclusive of all beings, inclusive of everything. You know? Doesn't matter how many kalpas he says we need to practice for. It's he could come up with a really big number of kalpas. He could say, guktillion, shmuktillion kalpas. And take my word for it, that makes 3,000 kalpas just seem like nothing. And a person might hear that and say, now I'm really getting this. But it's right now. What Katagiri Roshi is pointing to is live now. Live this all-inclusive temporally, all-inclusive spatially, all-inclusive of all beings. Live this reality now. That's your practice, endlessly. Don't be concerned about getting some wonderful result. Don't be concerned about how long you're going to have to practice. And then someone might say, well, gosh, what will I get if I do that? But don't worry about what you're going to get. Just, what'll it be like when I get enlightenment, you know? Won't be like anything. It's just this, showing up here and now. Continually live out this here and now reality showing up as just this. But our tendency is so much to have expectations about our practice and ideas about what we're going to get. And I had a friend who, she'd been practicing very, very hard for 5 years. But one day she was really feeling an anguish that she hadn't, that nothing had come to her and she hadn't gotten anything. Nothing had come to her and she was very much disturbed about that. And she said with great pain in her voice, she said, nothing comes. And shortly after that, she quit Zen practice. But it's never something that comes to you. It's always right here and now. We don't have to wait for it to come to us. We don't have to try and use a technique to get it to come to us. Don't worry about what it is you're going to get. Don't worry about how long it's going to take to get it. Just wholeheartedly live out this reality. Be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Allow in this practice, allow beliefs and expectations to naturally drop away. Just be aware here and now. Fully live this reality that is showing up here and now. Fully entrust yourself to this reality. Wholeheartedly live this reality, no matter how it's showing up. This reality shows up in all kinds of different ways. Sickness, health, wealth, poverty, good reputation, bad reputation, pleasure, pain, happiness, unhappiness, success, failure. All these things show up. All kinds of individuals, things, and phenomena, all sorts of things show up. But usually we get completely tossed away by this scenery. All of this is just the scenery or manifestations of here and now reality. We get completely caught up in it. I like this scenery. This is great. I like it when I am wealthy. But I hate it when I'm impoverished. I really like it when I have a good reputation, but I hate it when I have a bad reputation. You know, we get completely carried away by the scenery and the ideas and beliefs about what our life is and what it should be and what it isn't. And, you know, Katagiri Roshi says, fully live what shows up here and now. Be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. So this is a practice in which it can be seen that our true life couldn't correspond, couldn't match the preconceived ideas that we have about it. We can directly realize reality couldn't be that way. It couldn't be according to any conceptual explanation. This here now reality isn't something that could be packaged within a conceptual explanation, but conceptual explanations are very wonderful and valuable as pointers. But don't get rid of them. They're very wonderful, very valuable. Just don't get caught up in them, believing that these conceptual explanations exactly describe how it is. This is a way of life in which we can let go of egocentric confusion, which is usually how we live now. This is a way of life in which we can see and let go of how our true life is ignored or overlooked. And we can then resume the practice of living as we truly are. This is a practice where we're no longer striving for particular states of mind. We're not trying to seek something that we're lacking. We're not trying to go after something that is separate from us. We don't try to seek after truth or true life, true self. We just cease to cherish opinions, as it says in the Shenzhen Ming. Just let go of our ideas, and it becomes clear what our life is. And the Zen teacher Dogen used to say, the reason you don't wake up is you don't relinquish your views. Hang on to our views and try to understand reality through the one-sided views that we have about it. And we ignore the enlightenment, peace, freedom, wisdom, Buddha nature that's right now. Oh, maybe, gosh, I don't know, maybe that's enough for now. Do you have any questions? Yes. Hi, Mark.
I appreciate your blackboard analogy.
The blackboard analogy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Steve's. So that's what Steve used to say that years ago. That from him.
It makes me mad that Steve erases the words.
That's right. That was a good idea.
I was thinking that, you know, back in the day when we used blackboards, the teacher would always put a corner saying save. So the custodians wouldn't clean it or the bad student wouldn't wash it away.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about what is it that I'm trying to save? You know, if Steve washes away his words, how we all have these things, ideas.
That's right. Yeah. We all have a tendency to get caught up in ideas. Very much. We're looking for a really good one. This idea is a really good one. I'm going to hold on to this one because, by golly, this is worth hanging on to. But that's how we ignore reality. It's holding on to some particular
view. The irony, too, is that even the blackboards couldn't be saved anymore. The whole blackboards are gone now.
The whole blackboard.
The blackboards are all gone now. They couldn't even be saved.
I didn't quite get that. I'm sorry.
It's a weak joke.
Oh, well, I've told plenty of weak jokes today.
Thank you.
So I'm a bad role model in that regard.
I have a comment too.
Yes.
Well, first, I'm never going to think about meatballs the same way again. I love that story. It just brings a smile. But I know today you're talking about specifically a practice here. But what I love is how there are so many parallels to just contemporary life. Thinking about this idea of, in our culture, becoming contrasted with just being. I think there's so much profundity when you think about that, just taking what we're learning here into our lives. I am a lifelong becomer. And so being has always been like such an incredible challenge for me. And it's been through being here in the practice period that I've been able to shift my mindset in my life in terms of becoming versus being. And I have to tell a story. Last week, somebody reached out to me on LinkedIn because, again, diehard becomer, and they wanted to help me become something else. And it was so interesting because my response was, you know, I think I'm just into being right now. And when I wrote that, I had to step back and I was like, who wrote that? Right? I mean, and it was me. And so I love this talk and how it connects back to life. And moreover, how the practice here connects back to life. And specifically for me, so grateful. A little tired after becoming all these years, right? So
that's right. That's very good observation. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you know where I can get my hands on some of those celestial coveralls?
I guess if you'd have to be a celestial being. And maybe that will happen soon. Who knows? You never know. But, well, even if we wear celestial overalls, that isn't the final goal of our practice. Well, maybe I've said enough or too much. I don't know. So thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.